Welcome to the 9 Deadliest Sins of Communication with your host, Ronnie Moore. Communication is the lifeblood of any business or organization. Yet often, we are all guilty of common communication sins that can cause serious and costly mistakes, painful misunderstandings, and unnecessary friction between you and the people with whom you work. But an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. With this program, you'll get an in-depth understanding of the most common communication problems that we all experience in the workplace, as well as down-to-earth solutions that will keep your interpersonal relationships clean, clear, and static-free. Throughout this program, you'll listen in on a series of live-action vignettes that dramatize the deadliest of communication sins that commonly plague today's workplace. The situations and reoccurring characters that you will hear in these dramatic role plays are designed to give you a realistic example of how these problems occur in the real world and what you can do to prevent them. Ronnie Moore is an experienced business consultant, author, and trainer who will give you all the tools you'll need to recognize and overcome even the most deadly communication sins. On this side, you'll learn about confrontation phobia, the fear we all experience from time to time that can prevent us from speaking our minds and getting what we really want. And now, Career Track proudly presents Ronnie Moore and the first sin of the 9 deadliest sins of communication.
In the 9 deadliest sins of communication, you'll learn about common obstacles, important critical obstacles to clear, effective communication. And whether you're the speaker or the listener, the sender or the receiver of the signal, it's important to understand that these sins will cause static on the line. Think of communication like a radio message. The message can be clear when it leaves the station, or in this case, the sender. But because of interference, the receiver may not get a clear message, and thus we have static on the line. So whether you're committing the sin or someone else in your life is, you will learn tools to help improve the quality, the clarity of any communication in which you are involved. It's important to note here that this program deals with communication, not with manipulation. Have you ever known someone who took some kind of self-help program, something like this, and learned some cutesy, scripted technique or jargon, and then came back to the office and started practicing on you? You felt handled, you felt manipulated, and you wanted to say to that person, "Talk to me like a normal person. I'm not stupid. Please don't handle me. Don't use a tactic so that I'll have a tactic to use another tactic on you." This program is not about tactics. This program is about knowledge. It's about understanding what goes on in communication, what causes the problems or the static on the line, how you can improve your own communication, or how you can deal effectively with someone else who is committing the sin in question. The bottom line is that both of you walk away from the communication with a clear understanding. The 9 deadliest sins of communication are sin number 1, confrontation phobia. Sin 2, the do not disturb communicator. Sin 3, tuning out or poor listening. Sin 4, you've lost me. Sin 5, the charging rhino. Sin 6, mixed messages. Sin 7, sloppy communication. Sin 8, stealth communication. And sin 9, emotional flooding. Let's start with deadliest sin number 1, confrontation phobia.
Hi, John. This is Mary Masterson from Good Day Publishing. How are you doing today?
Oh, hi, Mary. I'm doing fine, just fine. What's up?
Well, I wanted to get back to you today. When we spoke last month, you mentioned you might be able to place that order on the 15th, and, well, here it is, the 15th.
Gosh, Mary, I already placed that order.
You did?
Yeah, sure did. Well, I would have thought you knew about it. I placed that order yesterday with that new guy you're working with.
New guy?
Oh, real nice guy. Phil. I thought you and he must be working together.
Phil? Well, we are. I must have gotten my files crossed somehow. Sorry to bother you.
Oh, no bother.
Listen, if you have any problems, you just let me or Phil know about it.
Sure will. Well, thanks, Mary.
Can't believe it. He stole my lead. Dirty rat.
Mary's upset because she thinks Phil has taken one of her customers in their customer service phone center. Mary started to confront Phil, but she stopped because she's afraid or phobic. Like Mary, have you ever wanted to confront, known you should confront, because something bothered you and it needed to be resolved, but you didn't? Why are you confrontation phobic? And why didn't Mary confront Phil? Why do we not confront and therefore communicate when we know we should? It's important to understand how we tend to view confrontation. I have an exercise I'd like you to try. Think about someone whom you know you need to confront. Someone who is perhaps a source of conflict for you. There's a difference, a problem, an issue between you. And think about the words that come to mind as you think about a confrontation with that person. Which words come to mind? When I ask people to do this exercise, they often give me very interesting answers. They'll say things such as angry, frustrating, useless, backbiting, horrible. Our history with the other people in our lives has taught many of us that confrontation is a very negative thing, that it's angry, frustrating, awful, terrible, so therefore we don't confront. We tend to opt for another strategy, an often used strategy, and that is called avoiding. Avoiding is defined as handling an issue by not handling it, or action through inaction. And there are several reasons why we tend to avoid. Probably the most common reason is that it's easier to avoid. It's less uncomfortable because we don't have to mess with the other person. We don't have to confront the person. We certainly don't have to communicate with the person. We can run away all by ourselves. It's interesting. Even if confrontation drew images for you of angry, frustrating, awful, terrible, if you were to look the word confrontation up in the dictionary, you would find that it doesn't mean any of those negative things. It simply means with face or to face it. It means to do something about the issue rather than doing nothing, which is what we do when we avoid. So actually, confrontation is simply the opposite of avoiding. It's doing something versus doing nothing. It's facing the issue. What's also interesting is that confrontation can cover the spectrum from awful, from the words we just said, the awful, terrible, frustrating, angering situation, to a fairly neutral thing, not good, not bad. In other words, have you ever gone to a meeting or a discussion where there was a problem between you and someone else, or your department and another department, and you got the issues on the table, clear heads prevailed, you stayed on topic, got some things resolved, and you walked out of that discussion, and it wasn't so bad? And most importantly, you got the issues resolved. You communicated well. Interestingly enough, confrontation can even be a very positive experience. Have you ever had a misunderstanding or an issue between you and someone else, perhaps someone you care about? You got up your courage and you avoided the phobia and you confronted the issue. And after a few minutes or even a few hours, you gave each other a hug or you shook hands and said, "Glad we worked it out. Really glad we talked." In that case, the confrontation was positive. Understand that what happens in a confrontation, be it terrible, neutral, or wonderful, is generally a result of the skills, the communication skills of the people involved and the intentions of the people involved. Are they there to resolve the issue, or are they there to hurt each other? But understand that the awful confrontations happen when people don't have good skills and don't have their goals in place. Also note that real conflicts are things that really need to be resolved. Not all differences have to be resolved. You and I don't have to agree on abortion or religion or politics, for example, to supervise a work team, set up a trade show, or do a proposal together. You and your spouse do not have to agree on the merits of a movie to raise kids, mow the lawn, pay your taxes, or go to work. Conflicts, such as a difference of opinion on a movie, can be let go. Let them go. But issues that are real, issues with real consequences if not communicated and then resolved, they need to be confronted, communicated, and then resolved. And if not, all you're doing is postponing the inevitable because real issues can never be avoided. So how do you know you're dealing with a real issue, one that really needs confrontation and communication? Well, ask yourself the question, if I don't confront this, if I don't communicate well and have some resolution, will something bad or unacceptable happen? Will I miss a deadline? Will a client be upset? Will that proposal fail and we won't get the account? Will I hurt my marriage or a friendship? And if the answer to any of those things is yes, there are real consequences to not confronting. And as the sign in my dentist's office says, see me now or see me later. That's the main criterion. If there are consequences to not confronting, Consequences that are real, that are negative, that will not go away without confrontation. The only option is to confront. Throughout this program, we'll be looking at each communication sin from two perspectives. When it's me, and when it's someone else. In other words, how to communicate better when you realize you've been committing the sin yourself, or when someone else is the sinner. Now think about when it's me. What about when you have confrontation phobia? How do you overcome your confrontation phobia, your desire to avoid, to do nothing rather than do something, which is the basis of confrontation? Well, the first thing you do is ask yourself, does this need to be confronted? Is this a real issue with real consequences? Or is it simply a disagreement or a difference of opinion that I wish wasn't there, but I can let go? I wish this person were different, but it's not getting in the way. It doesn't have real consequences. I can let it go. That's the first thing. If, however, it is a real issue with real confrontation needed, and you're still feeling phobic, try this exercise. Often what keeps us phobic is that we process what it would feel like or be like in the confrontation, and we contrast that to the effects of prolonged avoiding. Example, let's go back to the dentist. I would love to never have to go to the dentist for the rest of my life, and the dentist is an often avoided, non-confronted person in our lives. When I think about making that call for my checkup, I think about what it feels like, what it would be like to be in the chair, the noise, the expense, the pain, the discomfort, and of course, those negative images and feelings are enough to keep me avoiding or not confronting for years. What I do now is I stop thinking about being in the dentist chair because that's enough to keep me running and avoiding the confrontation. What I think of now is what I would like to produce, the change, the outcome. I don't think about being in the chair, but instead I think about walking out of the dentist's office with a nice clean mouth, writing a small check because it was only a cavity, minimal pain, getting a pat on the back, good job, Ronnie, you came early, we got it while it was still a cavity. I then contrast that to the absolute inevitable results of prolonged avoiding, root canal, a crown, 4 visits, lots of pain, lots of money. Or worse, I could lose the tooth. So I accept the temporary discomfort of the confrontation, in this case, being in the dentist's chair for a while, in order to avoid the worst-case scenario, root canal, crown, lots of pain, lots of time in that chair, lots of money. Think about confronting the person in your life, the person you want to avoid, the issue you want to avoid. But instead of thinking about being there with that person, thinking about the anger, the frustrating experience, the negative words, the discomfort, because that's enough to keep you from confronting, think about what it would feel like or be like to walk out of that room, shaking a hand, getting a hug, or if not getting a hug, having some resolution, speaking your mind, getting an issue resolved early and effectively while there's still a chance. And then contrast that to the effects of continuing to avoid this issue. Are you going to lose a friend? Are you going to lose a client? Are you going to lose your credibility? Are you going to lose money? Because if it is a real conflict, do you see that all you're doing is postponing it until it's going to be harder and harder to confront it and fix it? The reason that this exercise works so well is that you're no longer contrasting the bad, which is the confrontation, the process. You're no longer contrasting the bad with worst. When we contrast bad and worst, meaning in the dentist's chair now versus root canal and a crown in 5 years, it's easy to pick the worst because bad and worst, they both feel terrible. But when you contrast the positive outcome you're trying to achieve from an early, effective confrontation with the effects of prolonged avoiding, now you're contrasting good with worst-case scenario. And now it's so much easier to pick confrontation, the only option with good possibilities. If you could get this issue, this problem, off your plate because you confront it early and effectively, and you contrast that outcome, that desired goal, with the effects of prolonged avoiding, which are given when we don't confront a real issue, it's much easier to opt for confronting rather than for avoiding. If you tend to be confrontation phobic, keep in mind that when you confront, it is possible to stay calm, to stay emotionally composed. You have to decide what you're going to say before you get to the moment. Plan in advance what you're going to say, what your goals are. What happens here is that we map our minds so that in the moment, we're not talking off the top of our heads. Have you ever, in the moment, said something, and as the words were coming out of your mouth, you wished you had a fishing rod to pull them back in, because that's not what you wanted to say, and that little voice in your head is saying, "Why am I saying that?" But the tongue just takes on a mind of its own. We have blurtitis. We just blurt it out. You will confront much better when you realize that, in advance, you can decide, what do I want? Why do I want it? And when you decide the things that you want, the things that you're not willing to say or do, it is more likely that the next day, in the moment, in that confrontation, your mouth will cooperate with your mind because your mind gave it some thought the night before. No more talking off the top of your head. Stay rooted in your objective. Why is this confrontation necessary? It's important to know why you must confront so that you can stay focused during that confrontation. Bottom line, if it's a real issue, with real consequences of not confronting, all we do is prolong the inevitable and make the inevitable confrontation far more difficult to get through. And remember again that exercise whenever you're tempted to avoid something that you know should be confronted, something with real consequences. Process the exercise. Ask yourself, how can I turn this into focusing on the outcome, something good, versus the effects of prolonged avoiding or not confronting, which is awful, which is worse? Remember that when we process the bad versus the worst, it's so much easier to pick the worst because worst isn't that much worse than bad, and worse is later. And we don't want to deal with it now. We love our gratification now. It's easier to deal with the issue later. But when you contrast good with bad, it's easier to pick the good. Also note that one of the things we must always do is show concern for not only our own issues and interests, but for the issues and interests of the other person, so that people are more likely to confront us. Again, remember the definition of confrontation. Do something. Talk to us in a positive way. Now, we can't always have real concern for every person with whom we work, because we didn't always pick those people. But what we can understand is that we can always listen and be open with something called instrumental concern. Instrumental concern is when we know that we don't have a lot of real concern or loving concern for the person attached to the issue that needs confrontation, but we shift the concern we don't feel for the person to a concern, a real love for resolving the issue. Remember that the I in instrumental goes with the I in issue. And even if you and I are not close friends, if we don't have a lot of emotional attachment, we can still focus on resolving the issue so that both of our interests are at least minimally met, and we can convey that to our friends, to our colleagues, to our staff, to our family members. I'm open to listening. I want to resolve the issues. I may not always agree with you. I may not always do what you want, but secrets destroy. Real issues with real consequences need to be confronted. Because if they're not confronted early and effectively, they get bigger, they get harder, and the odds of resolving them go down. Remember Mary in the first vignette? She had a problem with her coworker Phil, and in that scene, she chose not to confront him. But as with most situations, the problem did not simply go away. Let's see what she does when it happens again.
No, I'm still working here.
Well, I wondered if you were. But I didn't think it mattered one way or the other, so I gave this month's order to that new fellow, Phil.
Phil contacted you?
Yes, he did. And you be sure to tell him how much I appreciate his help.
Right. I'll be sure to tell him.
Is there anything wrong, Mary?
No. Nothing's wrong. I'm just very glad you were taken care of.
As usual, you are the nicest people down there.
Well, thank you very much. I'll check in with you next month.
Well, Phil said he'd call me next month.
Oh, no. Phil may not be out of the hospital by then.
He's going into the hospital? I hope it's nothing serious.
No, not that serious. He'll be just fine. I'll call you next month.
Okay, then. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
At this point, Mary leaves her desk and starts to walk toward Phil's cubicle to confront him. But her confrontation phobia kicks in, and instead she rushes off to the ladies' room where she confronts the mirror instead of Phil.
Wow. You better get a grip. I should have talked to him the last time it happened. I knew I should. But you didn't. And you better do it this time or it'll happen again. But that means I have to confront him. And I hate that. What am I supposed to say?
Just tell him the truth. My objective isn't to beat up on him or cause any trouble. It's simply to hang on to my customers and give them the best possible service.
She takes a moment to role-play her impending conversation with him.
Phil, there's something very important I have to talk to you about. Really? What's that? Well, I usually wouldn't bother you with this, but this is the second time it's happened, and I want to clear it up before it gets more serious. Yeah? What is it? You've been contacting my customers and taking my sales, Phil. I'm sure it's just some kind of misunderstanding. Yeah. That's probably just some kind of misunderstanding.
With new confidence, Mary goes off to talk to Phil.
All right. I'll get that out to you today. Thank you. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, Phil. Listen, if you've got a minute, there's something very important I have to talk to you about.
That sounds serious. What is it?
Well, I know you've only been here a short time, Phil, but I know we have one thing in common. We both care about our customers. Excellent service is very important to us.
Of course.
That's what I thought. Here's the thing. I've been talking to two of my customers today, very good customers, and they both said you'd contacted them and taken their orders.
Well, see, I'm sort of a hacker, you know, and I pulled this file down from the server called MMA, marked extremely hot, and boy, is it. It is like taking candy from... Oh, no. Don't tell me. You're MMA?
No, I'm MM Mary Masterson, and May stands for... Well, May. This month is May. See, we keep our tickler files on the main server and download them when we're ready. Everybody has his own code.
Wow. Look, I'm really sorry. I guess I should have asked somebody.
It's not the end of the world.
No, really, I'm sorry.
Listen, if you need any help setting up your own files on the server, just let me know.
Hey, if you need any help hacking files...
Right. I'll let you know.
What Mary did was tough for her. She resisted her urge to run or avoid, and she confronted clearly and effectively. As you continue with this program, you'll learn many skills to help ensure effective confrontations through good communication. However, you can't use your new information and tools if you're not willing to confront in the first place. So like Mary, it's critical that you know when you're confrontation phobic and realize that your goal of solving the problem before it gets worse must override your initial discomfort about the confrontation. Even if the confrontation with Phil had not gone as well as what you heard, even if Phil had gotten angry or defensive, the issue would still have to be dealt with. Avoiding an issue that needs confrontation because you're concerned about the reaction you'll get simply postpones what you'll have to confront later anyway. And the longer you postpone the confrontation, the more likely it will be harder because the issue has gotten worse and bad feelings have grown. What do you do, however, when the phobia is not yours, when someone else should be but is not confronting you? For example, have you ever had a friend just stop calling you? Has a coworker started avoiding you or acting funny around you? You sense something's wrong, but you don't know what it is. How do you get someone else to confront you? One way is to make confrontation with you a non-threatening situation. Make yourself open to confrontation. Don't practice the shoot-the-messenger mentality. If you're a manager or a supervisor, tell your people that you want to hear it, that you're open to hearing it, and keep your word. If you say, "Tell me," and then get angry at the messenger, that may be the last time that person confronts you. That doesn't mean you can always give people what they want, but it means that you need to hear it, because it won't go away by itself. And pretending that an issue doesn't exist doesn't make it go away. When people realize that they can come to you and that you will reward open, direct communication, they're more likely to do so. When we get defensive, when we have a shoot-the-messenger mentality, when we hope that things can be blown away, pushed away, out of sight, out of mind, what happens is people realize that the consequences are not good for confronting, so they stop confronting us. Let's revisit Mary and listen to whether she's been able to use her new confrontation skills in other areas of her life. This time, let's listen to see if she's able to recognize this trait in someone else, and more importantly, how she handles it.
Okay, if you just look that over quickly, we'll move on to our next item. HR said we're supposed to get our vacation schedule in by Friday. Now, last summer, our team got messed up because almost everybody took off in August, so we're going to try to spread it out this year if we can. Here's the schedule. I'll leave it posted right here. Please try to sign up by Friday. Anything else? Okay, I guess that's about it. Have a great day.
As the meeting breaks up, one of the team members, Sheila, shakes her head negatively and walks to look at the vacation schedule on the wall.
Pete's sake. Hi. Have you guys made any plans for the summer?
Well, yeah, we had, but I guess it doesn't matter anymore.
Sheila, but it seems like you're upset about something.
No, I'm not upset.
You know, if you have a problem, especially if it's anything I've done, I'd really like to hear about it.
Sure.
I really would.
Right.
Sheila, what's up? You were fine during the meeting.
Well, it's just this vacation schedule.
What's the problem?
Well, you've already taken the first 2 weeks in August.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset anyone. I didn't think it would be a problem.
Well, it is.
Well, I don't want it to be a problem for you or anyone else. Had you already made plans for August?
Yeah. The first 2 weeks in August is the only time that Tom can take his vacation, so we're counting on it.
Well, let's take a look at the schedule. Bill and I aren't tied into any specific dates.
Really?
Yeah, I'll take a different week.
Okay.
No problem.
Well done. Mary didn't shoot the messenger. She listened to Sheila, she stayed calm, and she focused on the issue. She's made herself approachable to Sheila, now and in the future. By being open and rewarding Sheila's direct confrontation, Mary has increased the odds that Sheila will continue to be honest and open with her. Based on what you've now learned, take the time to think about someone in your life whom you've been avoiding. Consider these questions. Does this person or issue really need confrontation? How can I focus on the outcome as something good? What are the positive effects of confronting this person compared with the negative effects of prolonged avoidance? What is my objective in this situation? In other words, why is this confrontation necessary? Being clear about your objective will help you stay on track. Here's another thought. Is there anyone in your life whom you know has been afraid to talk with you about something? Think about how you'll deal with confrontation phobia in your life.
This concludes Side 1. Thanks for listening. Please turn over the tape as the 9 Deadliest Sins of Communication with Ronnie Moore continues.